Welcome to the Anderson Business Advisors Podcast, the nationally recognized preferred provider for asset protection and tax planning in the nation. This show is for investors and business owners looking to save on taxes and build long-term wealth with Toby Mathis, an attorney, author, business owner, and a featured instructor at Anderson's Tax and Asset Protection event held throughout the country. Enjoy the show.
Hey guys, this is Toby Mathis with the Anderson Business Advisor Podcast. Thanks for joining us. Today I have Ann Carlson from Strategic Risk Alternatives, which is basically creating your own insurance company. It's actually a really cool concept that I'm excited to be able to share with you guys. So I'm going to introduce Van. Hey, Van, thanks for coming and joining us.
Hey, it's always a pleasure to talk to professionals such as yourself and looking forward to getting our message out.
Hey, fantastic. Before we do the message, let's hear about you, where you grew up, what brought you into all this whole thing. So just kind of give me the story.
Yeah, so I'm from Idaho. Actually, my company's headquartered in Boise, Idaho. So I'm a farm kid. I grew up in a rural community and did some things there and there. Left for a while and when I joined the service and came back, got a college degree and was going out in the corporate America world of FedEx and UPS at the time. And this idea that I should become an insurance agent. So I got into risk management in 94. And then shortly, 2008, I was introduced to this concept. Business owners taking risk every day to do what they do. I had a lot of clients that were business owners. Experience of 2008, Great Recession, and kind of led me up to this concept. What do big businesses do when the economy takes a turn? Some of them, you watch, they actually thrive when downturn economy. And I think it's the way they position themselves financially, some of the tools that they were able to utilize. You know, we wanted to bring those concepts down to the small to middle market business owners that, to me, take on probably more risk than big companies do, because when they find a downturn in the economy, it's much harder to survive. And that's really where I saw this concept that we're going to talk about of owning your own insurance company in a much broader sense than risk mitigation is an absolute paramount to doing it. And unfortunately, our clients take on a lot of risks that aren't insured. It's one of the reasons why the code was introduced, which we can talk about. But I mean, into this, I think today, though, you know, as your profession evolves, you know, we've done well. It's been a good ride, but you know, things are really good right now. And God bless the economy and everything else. But to me, it's you can't be doing the same thing over and over again expecting different results. We know economies go up and down. And today is the day you should be looking at concepts like this. Because if you're in a position to build a rainy day fund up, to survive the downturns, you can be like those big companies. You know, the clients tell you, don't make your money when you're going down the slope. You make your money coming up the slope. And if you have the cash and you have the wherewithal, and we saw it, right? I mean, we saw people in 2011, 12, 13, 14, 15, we're actually benefiting from the economy years of ramp up. And so I just want to have business owners get educated, have a better business, have a better understanding of this. And at the end of the day, it's a tool. And it may work for the client, it may not. But I think it's worth noting that we think it's going to become a normal business practice to own your own insurance company. There are some tax plays involved. That's why, you know, if you Google this concept right now, obviously the IRS doesn't like this concept, but it's going nowhere. We think it's going to become a normal business practice. And it's not because of anything else other than the fact you're going to have to own these things for your own risk mitigation. Risk is becoming more and more difficult to assess in a lot of ways and so forth. So for me, it's really the education process for business owners. A lot of times they're hearing it for the first time. They can own their own insurance company. And it's not a new tool by no means, but it's a new concept for a lot of business owners.
Well, let's talk about the concept, because a lot of these folks have never heard of captive insurance. And just kind of set the table, you know, what is captive insurance?
Yeah, so captive insurance really has to do with what we utilize a tax code called 831B, and it was introduced in the 1986 Tax Reform Act. And at that time, farmers were finding themselves self-insuring crop insurance. Private sector was getting out of it, and now it's become basically FEMA, where the government's backed crop insurance, no different than they had to back the flood insurance, because for-profit insurance companies, it's too much of exposure, and they're not going to offer those types of coverages. However, self-insuring risk is not a deduction. For example, we deal with a lot of clients that have warranties. You know, promise a warranty into the future, that's an exposure, right? So you take a dollar off the side and say, hey, if something happens, I'm going to use this dollar. That's self-insuring risk, and Uncle Sam doesn't recognize that as a legitimate deduction. So they introduced 831B tax code for to create an incentive to own your own insurance company and really to be able to recognize self-insuring risk, but you have to make it move it through this mechanism and elect under the 831B tax code. And really what happens, the reason why that's such a huge advantage is the premium you put into the insurance company when the original code was passed, it was $1.2 million you can put into it per year, and the insurance company doesn't pick it up as income, right? Now it's $0.3 million per year, and they just recently changed that law back in the PATH Act days.
You say $2.3 million?
Per year you can put into your insurance company. And so think about it, right? So you're going to...
That's deductible, right? That's a deductible payment to your own insurance company.
It's deductible at your operating company level. No different than work comp, general liability, or any other to go on out there. They're under the 162 line item, necessary and ordinary expenses, mm-hmm. but dump it through this mechanism. And in those reserves, those premiums that go into that 831B insurance company, that, which is a C corp, does not pick that up as taxable income. Now, the only thing it does pay taxes on is investment income. Well, those are pretty substantial advantages in the marketplace. And there's a lot of reasons for why. I mean, I would tell clients, insurance companies are probably our strongest financial institutions in our country. And a lot of it has to do with the way they're taxed and the advantages they have in that realm. And this is just your ability to take advantage of those situations. You know, and again, the risk mitigation part can't go unwarranted. It's just that the advantages that go into the taxes are obviously pretty substantial.
All right. So now somebody's sitting at home or driving their car or something listening to this, and they say, all right, so you're just going to create your own insurance company. You go, what, do auto insurance, health insurance, everything else? Or are there limitations to what it can insure?
Yeah. So it's kind of, you know, I mentioned the 86 Reform Act, right? And, you know, when you hear about Congress passing these bills and they're 1,000, 1,500 pages, there's still a lot of things they missed. And one of the things they missed when they passed the 831B, they said own an insurance company. Well, they didn't define what an insurance company was in the eyes of Congress. Now, I might think that's pretty obvious what the insurance company is, but you'll be surprised what a taxpayer might think it is and what the Treasury Department might think it is. So, you know, and then we have court cases. But I will just tell you that, you know, briefly, there's a four-part test owning the insurance company. We, as the insurance manager, we don't complicate our clients' lives by no means, but we're certainly their manager of their insurance company. They adhere to the four-part test. We make sure they're eligible to be elected under the 831B tax code. We have a lot of rules and regulations put in place. And we have a lot of case law that has, just recently, there's been more case law come up that's really kind of paved the way for you to run your insurance company properly. I would tell you, Congress is a big proponent of this program. Lead business owners ought to be taking care of their own risk because, you know, the world's gotten complicated, right? Just through the age of information, we can talk about the brand protections, the social media, the supply chain risk, third-party vendor liability today is becoming more and more an issue. We're seeing emotional distress lawsuits coming in now, which clients have no coverage for that today on liability policy. So the risk, I can tell you, and that's where I get geeked out. Just, you know,
where are the big ones? Like you just mentioned a few. But, you know, just arbitrating out.
Yeah, I would say, yeah, a great example is dispute resolution, right? A lot of us are professionals. Our professional liability insurance doesn't cover us for a lot of things that we unfortunately get sued over today. So having a dispute resolution policy in place and protection, you know, I don't care what size of business you are in, maybe you don't have an itemized cost factor that goes into managing your brand. But in most businesses, today's brand's everything. I think when I sit down with a business owner, I think to answer your question quickly, I think it's the intangible assets, right? Traditional insurance companies do a great job insuring the tangible assets, which are your buildings, your vehicles, things that you've kind of mentioned. The intangible assets are harder to quantify, harder to identify. And truthfully, it's getting back to the flood insurance or the crop insurance. When it happens, it can be pretty catastrophic. And insurance companies aren't interested necessarily in insuring catastrophic type losses. And so that's where it gets into it. And now most of our business owners value the intangible assets of their business a lot of times more than the tangible. Mm-hmm. We've got to sit down with the client, we do a pretty big, I wouldn't say big, but in-depth feasibility study to make sure we understand the client. And then we talk about some of their needs. I mean, every risk profile, every industry has its own unique situations. Mm-hmm. But we have a good idea of most of our businesses because we've been doing this since, you know, now almost 11 years. But I think for us, you know, the brand, supply chain risk, dispute resolution, we're seeing more and more coverages come out that we're identifying. Mm-hmm. And really has to do with the biggest thing is the intangible assets of the business.
Are you looking to lower your taxes, protect your assets, and grow your wealth? Are you a real estate investor, stock trader, or business owner? If you answered yes, Anderson Advisors Tax and Asset Protection Workshop is for you. Let hosts Clint Coons, Toby Mathis, and Michael Bowman teach you how to protect and keep more of what you earn. Our workshops are held monthly throughout the country and via live stream. Two in-person tickets to the workshop are only $99. To learn more about the dates and locations, visit AndersonAP.com and register today.
Well, let's talk about this. So let's just say, like, I'm a doctor and I already have E&O insurance, but it doesn't cover me for everything. I could have employees suing me. I could have companies not pay. I could have all sorts of fun stuff that pops up. And so what you're saying is I could literally take money up to $2.3 million a year, pay it to my own insurance company and write that off. So I get a deduction right now for the $2.3 million.
Yes.
Then that goes into the company. And if it makes money on the 2.3, I pay tax at the company level on that. But it doesn't pay money. It doesn't pay any tax on the 2.3 I paid it.
That's correct.
All right. So let's say I do this.
I do want to take just one thing. Everything has to be actuarially determined, right? So one of the things that we do on the heavy lifting is making sure that we're actually determining those numbers. So when we say
you have to figure out what the risk actually is. And then
and we also have to make sure they qualify, you know. You know, that's some, it's got some people in trouble, right? For that, for those premiums. So I just throw that out there because unfortunately that's, I'm the risk mitigator first and foremost. So, but just know that, you know, it has to be a justified premium, has to be appropriate type premiums and risk and so forth. And those are things that goes into the 4-part test.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. It's as long as you follow the 4-part test.
What is the 4-part test? Let's just throw that out.
Well, the 4-part test is first off, you have a transfer risk, you have distribution. So there has to be a pooling. How are you utilizing the law of large numbers? That answers that question. And then the third one is a fortuitous risk, which is kind of what we're talking about right now. It has to happen by accident.
Mm-hmm.
Business risk. I would tell you that's probably where we define ourselves a little bit more than our competitors.
Mm-hmm.
We don't believe an employee leaving a job to go down the road to your competitor or because their spouse got a promotion and now they got to leave you is a triggering event for an insurance policy, in our opinion. So we don't offer those types of coverages. We take a very conservative approach. We understand because we're risk mitigation, we've been around the insurance business for going on almost 30 years now. We understand what the policies can and can't do and the fortuitous risk very well. And the 4-part test is acting in the principles of insurance. We feel acting in the principles of insurance is what got a lot of people in trouble with the program. Unfortunately, I would tell you it was hijacked for estate tax purposes probably for the last 15 years. There's been some changes on that, which I'm happy to dive into if we have time. But just know that the estate tax play has been taken off the shelf. That's been taken away from this concept. And we see more and more of an uptick for clients that really
were deducting money and then taking it out of their estate. Maybe the company wasn't owned by them. Maybe it was owned by their kids or something like that.
It was fantastic. Toby, it was fantastic estate tax planning, right? It was too good, right? And they fixed that. No, and the biggest fix is this. No longer lineal descendants are the beneficiary lineal descendants. So irrevocable trust or your grandkids can't own these vehicles anymore if you own a piece of the operating company. And that's where they cleaned that up. And I was glad to see that. But I would also note that that's when Congress upped it up almost another $1 million and the ability to put another $1 million. Plus, they also put an inflation rider in it. So every year we could expect that number to go up depending on what inflation does. So that those are good fixes. And I'm glad they were fixed that way.
So let's go over a common example. Like, do you have a typical client that comes in? I mean, is it doctor, dentist? Is it property owner? Is it somebody that owns an apartment complex or things like that?
Yeah. So a couple things on that. I mean, we deal with a lot of medical doctors. I mean, unfortunately, they have a ton of risks they can't buy insurance for. Let's say there's subpar coverages on some of their policies. I think malpractice insurance being one. Or maybe they have high deductibles or any of that kind of stuff. So we see that a lot. Obviously, brand protection is a big one for them. And even in the medical community, supply chain risks can be pretty significant too.
Mm-hmm.
Dentist side, we have specific products for the dentist. We have a warranty program for them that they can actually develop their own warranty program for anything that's a hard appliance, meaning anything from a filling to veneers to braces. So we have a great warranty product for them. Just so everybody knows, you know, auto dealers have been doing this the longest. They've always owned insurance companies in the back room when they're selling an extended warranty or any of those types of things. If you ever wondered why they were pushing you pretty hard to buy one, is it's one of the more profitable businesses they have now. One of the more profitable lines of business inside of a dealership is finance and insurance. And so they've been doing it the longest. We've taken that program and we've really put it into utilizing it for the dentist. And I think it's a fantastic program. We have dentists doing as low as $30,000 a year in their warranty program and to as high as $400,000 a year in their warranty program. Again, actuarially determined numbers, but it's a great product.
And let's walk through that just so somebody understands it. Because you have some lay people out there that are saying, what's the big deal? So we'll take the middle of that. Let's say it's $200,000. So the dentist is deducting $200,000, buying a policy for something they may end up covering anyway. But then there's a percentage that they're going to be covering or a percentage of that money that they're going to dip into. And there's going to be a delta that's going to stay in the company and continue to not be taxed and continue to grow.
Yeah. So let's say they offer a 5-year warranty. Well, let's say they charge $1,000 for a crown. And if our actual numbers come back based on the amount of crowns, there's a whole thing that goes into that. But for every crown you do in your practice, you can set aside $50 to honor that warranty. So now we're going to expense it, that $50 off of that, which you would have picked it up as profit, let's say. Mm-hmm. Set out of that our operating company. And now it's going to go into this mechanism. And when that patient comes back 18 months from now because they chewed on a piece of ice that they weren't supposed to, whatever happened, which to your point, most dentists do cover that for no cost whatsoever. So, now they're sitting in that chair and you're fixing that crown.
You're making a claim against your own policy.
Yes. And because I point out to dentists, you may not want to get paid, but I'm pretty sure your assistant, the power company, your loan, all that stuff that's out there. So it's just an efficient way to honor, first off, your promise to your patients. We also have just like your auto, we have to do preventive care. Our contract says you got to come back every 6 months and do preventive care in order to maintain the warranty. So we've actually seen a tick up in retention for dentists. Mm-hmm. And then it's just a marketing, could be a differentiator in a marketplace because a lot of dentists won't offer those kind of warranties. Or it's always goofy to me. I go to a dentist to get a crown done and shakes my hand and says, thanks. I go get a set of tires from a tire company and I get all sorts of warranty documents. Mm-hmm. You don't really know what you're getting with a lot of dentists. So we help them define their warranty in that. So that's a great product from that standpoint. Mm-hmm. The property management companies, we're actually going to go to a convention at the end of the month in June and we're apartmentalized and we're going to talk to a lot of property managers about starting to offer their own accidental damage waiver. Mm-hmm. No, the VRBO or Airbnb, when you go to rent one of those homes, they have that damage waiver on there and it could be a couple $100. Well, the property owner's not getting a piece of that. Now, they might be, if you read the policy they're getting, it's maybe $1,500, $2,000 in coverage, and they're paying $200, $250 for that. Mm-hmm. A great revenue source for the property managers. We see the property managers able to, again, differentiate themselves with their competitors. They're going to take on the first $2,500 in damage any of their tenants do to those buildings, properties, or apartments. And it's a differentiator, and it's additional revenue for the property manager. So, But here's the thing, we're expensing all those revenues out of their operating company, mm-hmm. dropping it in there. So they're able to expense that, transfer the risk to their insurance company. And when things come up, they have a surplus of revenues and money to handle it.
I'm a tax guy, so I'm going to want to walk through this. So let's say that you're putting $100,000 aside to this. You're going to get a deduction at your highest rates. So, or the operating company is going to get it. Now, with a C Corp, it's 21%. If it's you and it's flowing down to you, which most people are either S-Corps or they're running this partnership, but somehow it's ending up on their personal return, that could be upwards of 50% depending on the state they live in.
Absolutely.
It comes right off the top. So let's just say it's $100,000. I put that into this captive company. It's my own insurance company, but it's going to have to do a bunch of stuff. So I'm assuming there's going to be some cost associated with it. But let's just say I have my own insurance company and I'm dumping this money in. So I'm getting... Let's just say it's federal taxes, highest bracket, 37%. I'm going to save $37,000. At the end of the day, I'm going to close that company down at some point, and I recognize that income. How is that taxed when I close the company down?
Assuming all the premiums in there 1 year, 1 day, it would be considered long-term capital gains.
All right. So that's the big one. So again, yeah. Same set of facts. I'm at 37%. When I take it out, even if I'm in the highest bracket, that's 20%. Long-term capital gains rate, and hopefully I'm taking it at a much lower rate.
Exactly. And I tell clients all the time about this. And to your point, I think it's worth noting, Toby, is that, right now our clients win. We don't know what the future is going to look like when it comes to dividend capital gains, but we're deferring taxes today. We're mitigating risk. And I hope our clients win on the back end of these things. I have a feeling that I would hope our dividend, our capital gains will always be less than income, but that's been the case, is our history has proven. So we hopefully that will always be the case. But again, right now our clients win pretty well. And I would
say, we don't know.
Yeah, net of our fees. Yeah, net of our fees, they're still going to come out about a 15 to 25% arbitrage, meaning, you know, because the other thing to your point too, I think it's important, and this is really where guys like you would come in and coach and help your clients, is like, well, there's got to be a strategy. Here's what's nice about our program. You're able to build up a tax advantage revenue account or tax advantage dollars into an account that you have access to of risk that you cannot foresee. Also, you have access to those things, which means we expect money to make money. So those reserves and surpluses inside the insurance company should be in the
vet. Right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, exactly.
And they're protected. Like they're protected. They can have claims made against them.
Yes.
But they're protected from you from your activity as in your company. You're moving those monies aside for the rainy day, but they're also, you're protecting them by saying, hey, it's only certain claims that can be made against them, right?
Yeah, exactly. And the other thing too is, let's say you sell your business and you don't have no need for the insurance company. We'll allow our clients to keep them open up to 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
3 years, that's where guys like you can come in and strategize with your client about, the options that are available to clients in these types of programs. There's so many more options available to them. And again, this is what big companies do. They've been doing this stuff for literally decades. It's just that I think our small to middle market business owners need to be aware of these. Again, like I said earlier, just a tool, guys. But I think it's worth noting that it could be a big game changer in the event something would ever turn against you.
All right. So what's the tip? So putting everything on the table, what would be a typical expense to set up an insurance company if you're doing this on your own?
So one of the things when I first got introduced to this concept, and I think you guys, I think you've looked at other programs like ours. Mm-hmm. What kill the deals, to your point, are the fees. And I never thought fees should never kill a deal. And unfortunately, they do. We designed our program with that in mind to where a lot of businesses can take advantage of owning their own insurance company. So I would just tell you on the forefront, it costs $5,000 to form an insurance company with us and $5,000 a year to maintain it. And the maintenance goes towards your tax returns and paying of the domicile fees to maintain your insurance company in that domicile.
Mm-hmm. Unusual domicile, if I remember right.
Very, very. And it's all domestic. It's here done in the United States. And so it's very favorable for a lot of reasons. But again, if anybody listening to this has, can reach out to you or myself, we can dive more into whatever they want to. And of course, on our website as well. But aside of all that,
what is your website? Like, we'll post it on this, but what is your website just in case someone's listening?
StrategicRiskAlternatives.com.
So StrategicRiskAlternatives.com.
Yeah.
And I've been on your site. It's pretty straightforward. So $5,000 gets you a company. You do the tax returns. You do the compliance for the company. That's it. That's included and all that.
Yes. And then there's fees that will determine on the types of products and whether or not we have to build pools and everything else. But just know that we do this program with the idea that first and foremost, the client doing this need to win. They need to be the winners. We expect to make money just like everybody else does. But we make sure our program is designed where the client wins. And so our average client per year, they put about $240,000 away into our program.
Mm-hmm.
Competitors, they wouldn't even talk to you. It's kind of like going to somebody that doesn't have enough money to make.
So I could actually insert here and say most captive companies, they start, the minimum I've ever heard is about $30,000 a year. And a lot of them start at 75 to 90,000. You're not doing this unless you're doing the $1 million. You're not doing this unless, like, I always looked at this and said the minimum you're ever going to do a captive for is probably $500,000. And what you're doing is you're taking money out of your tax bracket, the top bracket, you're putting it in a safe place that nobody can touch in case you have claims, so you're not drained out of your cash. Because if you pay tax on that money, so let's just do the math. Let's say I have a $100,000 claim, but I paid tax on it. I don't have $100,000 left. If I made $100,000 and I put it aside in a savings account or whatever, and I said, hey, we're just going to earmark that in case we have a claim. And then you have a claim. If you're in the highest bracket in California, you paid 50 some odd thousand dollars on that hundred. You only have $47,000 left. Pay a $100,000 claim. If you do this, you have the hundred minus the cost of it. So you might have 95. 90,000. Let's be real. There's other fees. So let's just say it's $90,000 left, but it's, you deducted it. So you actually got a tax benefit and the money is sitting over there. Is that a fair assessment?
It is. And not only that, but the way we do our pooling, our clients will actually have a lot more coverage than they actually put aside dollars for. So, and again, those are, so we have a due diligence package that kind of dives deep into things. We're able to utilize a safe harbor ruling that very little professionals know about called the 2009-26. It was the last safe harbor ruling written for the 831B tax code. We're uniquely positioned for our clients to take advantage of that safe harbor ruling and it goes into our due diligence package, which we're happy to provide to anybody. It was designed for CPAs and the tax attorneys and so forth, but it kind of deep dives. And if you go to our website and want to request it, we're happy to send out. We don't care who, no NDEA is required. Well, we're happy to send it out to anybody. But for us, though, it's understanding the mechanism and understanding. And I think you bring up great points. I mean, you know, we don't know. I hope the economy stays good forever. And one of the things I always tell clients about is like, well, if you're having a good year, just to take a little bit off the top and put it off the side, that's just risk mitigation 101. I mean, and if anybody that survived, when they survived through 08, 09, and all those years, those several years, you know, they had to do a lot to overcome what the situation they were in. And this is a game changer for them in the event those days ever happen. And I hope they never do. And the good thing about that is they sell their company, they shut the insurance company down, and they pay long-term capital gains, which hopefully is less than what they would have paid anywhere else.
Attention all real estate investors, business owners, stock traders, and anyone looking to get out of the rat race for good. We all know time is money, but did you know there's a wealth of resources on how to make more money, keep more money, and protect what you've earned all for free online? Anderson Business Advisors YouTube channel offers free resources on asset protection and tax reduction from lawyers and CPAs designed to help you keep more money in your pocket. To learn how to limit your liability, protect what you've earned, and minimize your tax burden all for free, subscribe to Anderson Business Advisors on YouTube today.
Hey, Van, what's the sweet spot for how much should, if you're making, just say, if you're making X, you need to actually see what this could do for you. So if I'm making $10,000 a year, this is not something I'm going to look at. If I'm making $100,000, maybe. If I'm making more, like what's the sweet spot?
I would tell you from a, first off, I'm always amazed how people make money in this country. And it's one of the more exciting parts that we have in business when we have a client come to us and we're like, you're doing what? How much? I love, but only in America. But, you know, I would tell you gross revenue of $1 million in an operating company, I would say would be a good baseline for us. Now that's gross revenue, right? So we don't, insurance companies don't care about your net profit. You know, they care about your credit score as a business, but they don't care if it's profitable or not. They literally look at the gross revenue to determine their exposure for risk. But so I would tell you $1 million is probably the minimum.
Gross revenue, not the bottom line number, but the top line.
Yeah. But then I run into medical doctors that have great margins that maybe $500,000 makes them and they, you know, their taxable brackets and all that good stuff. So the point is, you know, because what I don't want to do again is the fees are the fees, right? We've crushed our fees about as best we can at this point. So, you know, I'm not going to sell something to a client or talk, you know, if it doesn't make sense for the client from a tax saving standpoint. And again, we're not the ones that created the tax incentive. Congress put it in the tax code. So we're just going to utilize the tools and learn how to play the game the best. And I think our program really helps clients do that. So to answer your ultimate question of where does it make sense from a cash standpoint, I have a dentist doing this for $30,000 a year. And I'll be honest with you, he hates 401ks because for staff, his staff can't get the contributions up high enough for him to max his stuff out. And he loves doing our program and he has a warranty. He's got a 5-year warranty. He's got a book on the books for liability.
What's his total cost? If you don't mind me just like,
we have a specific program for dentists. So it's going to be comparable to what a 401k would have cost with a contribution. So it would land between $8,000 and $10,000. That doesn't make, but for him, it makes a lot of sense. And again, these are, so, you know, to answer your question, and I don't want to be dodging it. It's just, it used to be a lot easier to answer.
Yeah.
It's a lot tougher over the years because we have some clients doing the max that you can justify. And we have some clients, like I said, doing 30,000. The cost to form the insurance company was the same, right? So
that's what's nuts. In my brain, the cheapest I'd ever run across was 30,000. So in my brain, I'm always thinking, oh man, you need like, you got to be putting a couple $100,000 a year to make this thing actually look like it's going to save you some money and put money back in your pocket.
And that's a fixed cost. So if you didn't contribute, go out to pay that. And to me, that, I mean, that's just.
No, I've never known anybody that actually did it where they didn't. Like, that was, so this is like the secret sauce. So you guys probably, you guys charge something on the managing of the risk pool. Like, there is some complexity here where you have to take your money and it can't just be, hey, I'm going to buy a bunch of real estate with it. It's, you're putting a good, you're running it like an insurance company, which means you have to pool risk.
The pool risk, reserves have to be maintained. Obviously, insurance companies live and breathe and do surplus. Our clients, we have to educate them on the concept of owning insurance, but every insurance company wants surplus. To your point, surplus becomes a little bit more liquid in our illiquid type investments potentially. But those are conversations we have with our clients. Once they've been on the books with us for, you know, anywhere from 3 to 5 years, we'll start to talk about that a little bit.
It's about 30%, right? Like, so if I'm putting $100,000 in there, I should assume that I'm going to put $30,000 into a lockbox somewhere, right?
Yeah. So yeah, and that's the minimum. And we'd also, I think worth noting that our clients maintain 100% of their own reserves. It's in the name of the insurance company. We get put on as third-party correspondents for investment accounts, for example, but we have no signature authority. We have no, our clients do sign an investment agreement, but they can and can't.
Somebody's still managing it to make money, right?
Yeah.
So you guys aren't going out and option trading with it. Like, hey, I'm going to do crazy stuff. You have to do like blue chip portfolio.
There's an investment agreement the client signs. And to your point, as long as it's trade plus three, we expect money to make money. Money should never sit idly by. Ironically, though, a lot of our clients are fairly conservative by nature, and a lot of times they put a pile up in a bank account somewhere. So,
Which is fine if I'm taking it. Again, you're the guy in California who's getting killed in taxes, and for every dollar you put in, you immediately save 40 to 50 cents. Then this is a no-brainer. You're looking at it saying, hey, if I could put $200,000 in there, I just saved myself $100,000, and it cost me $10,000 to $20,000 to do it. And then when I cash it out, that's when I'm retired in Florida, you know, and I'm going to pay zero capital gains on it because I'm not really making any money. I'm not sitting there. A lot of these guys don't have their own retirement accounts. This is their retirement account. So maybe I'm taking it out of
there. You're absolutely right.
Yeah. Yeah.
So. And the thing is again, if anything happened along the way, to your point earlier, they would just use after-tax money to fight the fight. Well, yeah. Tell you this, if I can use pre-tax dollars to fight the fight, I'm in a much better position to survive.
You actually have money put aside to fight the fight. So what we saw in 2008, 9, and 10 in my world was people that could not afford to do battle with the bank or do battle with their business partner or do battle with a customer who wasn't paying because everybody was experiencing all sorts of bizarre effects of the economy. So even if you didn't foreclose on a house, you were still impacted. You had lines of credit pulled, you had things that you used to have access to that weren't there, or you had clients that were supposed to be paying you go away and go bankrupt, and all of a sudden you're writing off debt. This money is put aside. This is the money that's to save you during those times.
Well, you know, I talk about in my presentations a lot, but I talk about when I was in the insurance business, I loved the fourth quarter because I had a bunch of business owners always calling up because they said, hey, man, I'm going to buy more equipment. Accountant says I owe a bunch of money. I'm going to buy more stuff. And that's what I'm doing. I'm taking advantage of the 179. And then I watched those same clients go out of business. And I thought, this is a pain. And that's really gets back to my original point about this is how big businesses operate. They put they have a lot of rainy day funds. I mean, guys, owning their own insurance company has been an accepted principle. Microsoft, who's going to sell Microsoft product liability, God sakes, right? I mean, right. So they've always had their own insurance companies. They may not care about the deductions or, you know, they may not have an 831B insurance company, but whatever premium they expense out of their operating company, deducted it, it was still an expense at the operating company level. So it's been a big business tool for a long time. Fees, it killed a lot. It kind of cut a lot of people out to be able to program. And here's the thing, guys, competition now. And just like, you know, anytime there's competition in place, it typically drives down fees. And that's where presses them, right? So that's where we're at today. You know, in 08, there was 8 states promoting you to own their insurance company in their states. There's now 30.
Wow.
So as domicile expansion goes up, you know, that's where the competition comes in too. You know, there's a lot of, again, there are complexities to it, but just know the availability to do this is in so many more places than it used to be. Most Fortune 500 companies have all their insurance companies offshore. It's in Cayman, Bermuda, Cooks. I mean, there's, you know, the Bahamian. Yeah.
And that's major cheddar, major expense to do that. And you may as well just put the Red Bullseye right on your back with the
IRS. Totally agree. Yep. That's why we do it domestically and we keep it very clean for our clients. And And here's one other thing I would tell you too, Toby. And I think it's worth noting is we have a warranty too. And when I tell our business owners, like, hey, we have rules and we have specific rules and they're not to be broken. Mm-hmm. Don't break our rules. And if your insurance company was to ever be challenged, if this was not an insurance company, you couldn't elect them to 831B. Mm-hmm. Expect that client to bear that burden financially, nor with attorneys that may not know about this code. We have our own legal team in, and we'll also provide the finances to manage that with our clients. And again, I would tell you this, our attorneys that we work with, we hire the attorneys and CPAs. We don't have in-house attorneys or CPAs. We hire those guys, best and brightest. And they've all worked at one time for the IRS, either prosecuting or under the chief counsel in civil cases to challenge 831B deductions. And those are our attorneys that have gone in private practice. They write our legal opinions for us. And again, we're happy to provide those to anybody that would request them. We're an open book here at Strategic. So
we do the same thing in my world. I'll just tell you that much. Our two guys, one worked for chief counsel and one was a lead trial attorney. You always bring in the guys that know everybody because they can get things done with the phone call. Hey, real quick, just because I want to leave with a few questions. I know we've gone over a little bit, so perhaps you'll stick with me for a couple more minutes. The first one is best successes you've seen. Number two is worst disasters you've seen. And then last thing to leave us with is just a rule of thumb. Anything you could impart on our folks out there after all your experience in this 25 years in this world of insurance and risk.
Yeah. So I would tell you that some of the best things I've seen is planning. You know, succession planning today is very difficult. And so I've dealt with some, you know, clients that have built these insurance companies up and now they want to go after the sunset. They might have a son, daughter might want to take over, or a partner want to be bought out. And then I've sat down in the rooms with the state tax attorney, not state, but tax attorneys and CPAs to say how that succession was going to work out. And I could tell you that our tools brought.
You got a pot of money of it, right? You had a pot of money set.
Yeah. And again, it gives them options. So to me, the exciting part is what you can do in the back room with these things that up to professionals to deal with. We're just going to provide the mechanism on the front, make sure our client's compliant. Those things have been great to see because selling a business is difficult in today's world. I mean, it's always been difficult just because of the way it's taxed. And that's a sad part of what goes on, but I don't know what to fix that other than maybe utilizing a tool like we have. The worst case, just in our own program, I had a medical doctor be with us, who was only there for a year with us, and he had lost a patient being sued. And his malpractice insurance company, it was a young mother, kids, somebody was going to pay. You know, that's just the way the world works. And I'm not here to say anything about that other than the fact that he made local news. And we triggered a brand damage claim for him. And for him telling me that, Van, I got into this for a lot of reasons, but, you know, obviously taxes was a motivation like everything else in life is. And he said, I never thought I'd be using you guys. And here I am in the first year. And I'm thankful because he had to hire a publicity agency up. He had to, they call them white hats on the internet, where they had to start blogging and writing different articles, start to push down some of the negative things. Because, you know, unfortunately, in professional insurance, it's a math problem a lot for the insurance companies. Meaning, is it worth fighting or is it worth just writing a check? And that's where the math comes in. And then, you know, I think he was well within his rights, what went on and all that stuff. But at the end of the day, the claim was settled and he felt the brunt of that with his brand. His brand, I mean, he took what he did for a living very seriously. And so it was interesting to see that. And that's probably one of the things, you know. And to end all this is, you know, our clients today are risk takers. I mean, I deal with a lot of entrepreneurs and it's across the gamut of industries we work with. And like I said earlier, I'm always impressed how some people make money. You know, it's just like, you know, he's glad you thought of that. I never thought of it. God bless you for doing it. But, you know, so the risk taking is going on every day. And unfortunately, we're starting to move into society that maybe that's not, or maybe it's never been recognized as much as it should be. But again, if this is a good year, which I think it is for a lot of businesses, just be able to take a little bit off the top and put it off to the side and still have it, still have access to it, still have those things. It's just risk mitigation. The best way I can handle it, you know, and that's really why the code exists. And to me, we get up every day to do what we do. And it's not sometimes easy. And a lot of times it's a big reward. And when it is, if we can just take a little bit off the side and put it away for that rainy day and hope the rain never comes. And if it does, by God, you're going to be able to survive it much more effectively and efficiently than without it. And if it comes, then you actually even win again on that other end. So to me, this is just a great business tool that a business, every business should be looking at. And for my benefit, it's just a matter of education and getting the word out to clients. And I appreciate opportunities such as yours to speak on your platform and just to get the concept out and get the idea and see if it works for them. And we're happy to work with any of your clients that might be listening to this or anybody else out there that we can work with and just educate, really, is where we're at today.
I have three simple rules, Van, and that is to calculate, calculate, and calculate. So if you have risk, calculate it. If you have tax liability, calculate it and see whether you can actually get a couple different benefits from something that's logical and makes sense anyway. Because if you ever have a claim, you can't go to the IRS and say, hey, you know what? I'm going to have a loss this year because that money I gave you last year, I'm going to have to ask for some of it back. They don't give you the money under those circumstances. You're always better off to keep the money in your own pocket for as long as humanly possible. So I appreciate you coming on, and I'm still kind of in shock at the cost. Like, again, I come from a world where I remember distinctly when the cheapest captive insurance was $90,000 if you were going to make your own company. And then it went down to 75. And then I remember the first time a CPA said, it's only $30,000 a year. And I was like, wow, how are they doing that? Because you actually have to run the insurance company. I know how hard it is. And so I'm still like, wow, this is getting to the point now where it becomes a no-brainer for certain people.
Absolutely. And to your point earlier about the IRS, I mean, try to run to a bank during those times too, right?
Yeah.
It's all been done. But no, I absolutely think, and you got to remember who my client was. My client were mom and pops. I had a handful of clients that were paying, you know, $1 million or more in premiums, but most of my clients were paying $30,000, $40,000 in work comp, general liability and all this, but they still were needing these types of tools. And it just reached costly wise. You know, I come from the world, pigs get fed, hogs get slaughtered. And, we're insurance guys, we're risk mitigators, and we're here for the small to middle-sized businesses, where unfortunately a lot of these other captive managers are just out there trying to slay dragons and kill elephants, and most of them are attorneys out there promoting it. They expect to get a certain dollar amount for their time, and we want to build a business, and we want to build long-term relationships with our clients and afford them the ability to do long-term planning. And unfortunately, most businesses today, they all look at 5 years, and you know, nobody's in this business, nobody runs a business for 5 years and expects to get out, right? So, yeah. I mean, they have grandiose ideas to do that. But so these are long-term planning strategies that I think every business owner owes it to themselves to look into.
Absolutely. So I really appreciate it. So it's strategicriskalternatives.com. I'll post some stuff up here so people can find you. And I just want to say thank you for spending some time with us and sharing with our clients.
Always my pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to today's podcast. Show notes for links to everything mentioned in this episode can be found on our website at andersonadvisors.com/podcast. Be sure you subscribe to our podcast. And if you are already a subscriber, please provide us a review of what you thought of this episode.